This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Reverse course for the task force. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, May 6th. Rather, May 7th. Glad you could be with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
A day after saying there were plans to disband the White House coronavirus task force, President Trump now says the panel will stay in place.
The Labor Department releases its latest weekly jobless numbers today. It's expected to show a slight decrease from the previous week.
The key to reopening states' economies could be social distancing based on risk. We'll explain how it works.
And strategies to consider if you're facing balloon payments for your mortgage because you've asked for help from your lender. Jessica Menton at USA Today explains how homeowners should proceed if they face a whopping mortgage payment after deferring it because of a layoff. President Trump has had a change of heart about the White House coronavirus task force. He now says it will remain in place, but will have this new focus of reopening the country and developing a vaccine. Mr. Trump made the decision yesterday, one day after administration officials said they were considering dissolving the group.
I thought we could wind it down sooner. But I had no idea how popular the task force is.
The president added that the membership of the task force could change. It currently includes Dr. Anthony Fauci, the government's top infectious disease expert, and Dr. Deborah Birx, the White House's coronavirus response coordinator. The group had been appearing less often in public for press briefings as of late. An administration official said the group was meeting less frequently. Some of Mr. Trump's advisors believe the lengthy briefings were hurting him politically. The Labor Department today releases its latest weekly jobless claims numbers. The upshot, millions more Americans likely sought unemployment benefits last week. That suggests a broadening of layoffs, even as many parts of the country start to reopen from government restrictions designed to avoid spreading the coronavirus. Reuters says the report will probably reinforce economists' views of a drawn-out recovery of the economy, which is reeling from nationwide lockdowns and stay-home orders, as you know. On a related note, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy is extending his state's public health emergency another 30 days.
Our team gets asked a lot, why can't we be more specific? Why wait? Why not now? And I would just say this, we are working morning, noon, and night, but I will say we also don't have all the answers.
Meanwhile, initial claims for state unemployment benefits around the country likely totaled 3 million for the week ended May 2nd, according to a Reuters survey, down slightly from the prior week. A Georgia prosecutor has called for a grand jury investigation into the shooting death of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old man who was allegedly killed after being chased by two men in February while out jogging in a residential neighborhood in southeast Georgia. An incident report from the Glynn County Police Department obtained by the New York Times identifies 64-year-old Gregory McMichael and his son, 34-year-old Travis, as two white men who pursued Mr. Arbery, though they are not immediately identifiable in video footage. Family attorney Benjamin Crump believes Mr. Arbery, who's black, was a victim of racial profiling.
We are calling for an immediate arrest. The same thing that would have happened to anybody else who killed a human being like this, regardless of the color of their skin.
Video footage of the shooting allegedly taken by a bystander was leaked on social media. The legal proceeding cannot go forward until June 12 because the courts are closed due to the coronavirus pandemic.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday. A French official says too much carelessness and the epidemic restarts. A little too much caution and an entire country sinks. The balancing act facing some world leaders is difficult enough, but it's aggravated by a lack of essential information. Which social distancing measures offer acceptable trade-offs in terms of lives saved and economic costs incurred? Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal, has been exploring the question. Greg, take us through this.
Well, exactly as the French prime minister said, there's this like tension that every governor, every president, every national leader faces between trying to save as many lives as possible from the virus, but also trying to like maintain jobs and keeping getting the economy growing again. So how do you balance those two things? Well, in economics, there's something called cost-benefit analysis. You try and figure out what's the value of the benefit that a policy is delivering and how much is it costing in terms of economic output. And I think if you looked at the millions of lives we've probably saved, it's probably the case that the economic turmoil is worth it. But I don't think we know for sure whether each individual measure meets that test. I mean, there are literally dozens, if not hundreds, of different types of social distancing measures, from closing restaurants and stores to like suspending schools and banning large gatherings. Which of these actually are saving lives and are doing so at an acceptable price? So what I'm trying to argue is that we need risk-based social distancing. We need the measures benefits to be commensurate with the costs that they're imposing on society.
And that means what exactly in your mind?
Well, so for example, let's compare churches and schools. Right now, a lot of states have basically suspended either church services and schools because they're both large gatherings of people. But we know that they're actually very different for the following reasons. Children, schools are mostly attended by children who are very young, and we have learned are somewhat insusceptible to the virus. When they're less likely to get it. If they get it, they're less likely to get really sick. Churches are mostly attended by older people, and they're much more vulnerable and much more likely to get it. So right off the bat, you're saving more lives by keeping churches closed than you are by keeping schools closed. And then if you look at the cost, closing schools is really costly. It's not just the support staff at schools that lose their jobs, but there's parents who can't work because they're looking after their kids. And then there's long-term costs in terms of mental health for students and their educational attainment. That's not the case when you suspend church services. So a risk-based approach would treat those two things quite differently.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, too. You said we've got these different estimates, which could change, and that then alters the trade-off arithmetic. So I guess to your point, it's like a moving target.
Well, that's exactly right. So one of the problems with the virus is that we try to project the number of people who will get the virus, the number of people, of those people who will be hospitalized and die, using a variety of models. And these models also try to forecast what's the impact if you impose different social distancing measures. But the models have a variety of shortcomings. They're often not able to be granular enough to sort of like take into account the fact that, you know, some people are older, some people are more vulnerable, some people have, you know, pre-existing conditions. We live in communities of different densities. Some people commute to work by car. Some people work from home, and some people take the subway. And so different measures have different effects in different places. And none of these models try to capture how economic costly they are. So the problem is as we try to reopen our economies, our leaders are often kind of in the dark as to whether where they are in terms of that trade-off between health and economics.
We're speaking with Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. He's written a piece entitled Risk-Based Social Distancing is Key to Reopening. You referenced, too, that some of these disease modelers are striving to craft more nuanced solutions. But how do they do that?
Right. The modelers, the epidemiologists and the biological statisticians who design these models, every week they're learning more about the disease. They're learning more interesting things about how it affects different people differently. And they're trying to like build that information into their models. So they don't have to just look at the entire United States. They can now look down to individual counties and cities and even sometimes neighborhood blocks because they have information, for example, from smartphones that tell us how many people are moving around. and how that mobility changes in response to a new social distancing measure.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Trump administration has shelved a set of detailed documents created by the nation's top disease investigators meant to give step-by-step advice to local leaders deciding when and how to reopen public places during the still raging pandemic. Those public places include mass transit, daycare centers, restaurants, and bars. The report by the CDC was supposed to be published last Friday.
Number two.
Senate Republicans are citing renewed budget deficit fears as they pump the brakes on more coronavirus aid spending, putting them at odds with President Trump's push for tax cuts and an infrastructure package. Many GOP lawmakers say new infrastructure spending is a non-starter. They are also lukewarm on Trump's call to slash payroll taxes.
Number three.
A grand jury will decide if criminal charges are warranted in the death of a black man who was shot after he was chased by two armed white men who later told police they thought he was a burglar. 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery was shot and killed in February in a neighborhood outside Brunswick, Georgia. Two men, a father and son, told police they saw him running and believed he was a burglary suspect. Wanda Cooper is Arbery's mother.
He was just jogging, and his life shouldn't have ended the way that it ended.
The two men told police Arbery attacked them after one of the men got out of the truck with a shotgun, but video taken by a bystander show he was jogging when he was killed. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been released from the hospital after being treated for gallstones. Ginsburg underwent non-surgical treatment on Tuesday for a benign gallbladder condition that was causing an infection. She's been participating in court proceedings via telephone, like other justices. And NBA teams have been asked to help the Mayo Clinic with a study that could help researchers come closer to finding a solution to the coronavirus crisis. The NBA and its players are partnering with Mayo officials who need volunteers for a study largely centered around antibodies. Additional goals of the study include being able to identify more patients who could donate plasma and improve care for patients who are dealing with the virus, plus potentially move researchers closer to a vaccine.
All right. Good job by the NBA. Thanks, Jen. Many homeowners struggling financially during the coronavirus pandemic are worried that mortgage servicers are now requiring them to repay postponed mortgage bills all at once after allowing them to put off those payments under the CARES Act, one of the stimulus bills. Who's expecting to have that kind of money after a furlough or layoff? Here's what to do from Jessica Menton, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Jess, explain.
Really, when it comes to the CARE Act, it offers you a couple different things. And the biggest thing is, like, homeowners who've experienced a financial hardship from the pandemic can request a forbearance for up to 180 days, and it can be extended for another 6 months after that if you're still under financial duress. So that's really up to a year. But the bottom line is that happens if you have a federally backed loan. So if your loan is backed through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, things like that. Mm. It's not if you necessarily have a private loan directly through your bank, because your bank, as you know, they can service that loan from, say, those government entities. And so that's what caused confusion. So if you do have a government-backed one, you are supposed to, you know, have those rights to ask for those kinds of forbearance options. But if you don't, you might not necessarily be afforded the same options, and you're kind of stuck to whatever the bank is really offering you.
Yeah. All right, so you referenced the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has weighed in here, too. What are they doing?
Yes, so they specifically have said if you have a federally backed loan that you are not going to be forced to make this balloon payment. So again, that doesn't fall into the category if you do have that private loan through your bank. So they said if you do have a private loan and you feel like you aren't getting the help that you need, you can file a complaint with the CFPB and they will follow up on that for you, because I would imagine it's even hard to get a lot of these banks, unfortunately, on the phone, because, you know, they're also dealing with this pandemic and are probably a little bit understaffed and overwhelmed with a lot of the call volume. So that's another issue that borrowers have unfortunately been facing. But they've really said that you should, you know, stick to it and continue to try to get them on the phone so that you can get the relief that you're afforded.
We're speaking with Jess Menton, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Her piece is called "Are You Facing Balloon Payments for Your Mortgage? Here's What to Do." So you referenced before, some of these folks with kind of the government-backed mortgages won't be forced to make a balloon payment, but would they owe it at the end, or some other way would be figured out?
Right. And so another part of that confusion was when they were saying, oh, okay, after 90 days, you would have to pay all of that in a lump sum. Typically what would happen is you would put those payments towards the back end of the loan. And so that's what these experts are saying. They're saying that there should be options for either further forbearance for you, or if you can still pay that and you feel like you can, you've gone back to work after those 3 months, you could even do a sort of loan modification where they could work with you on your most recent income and change your payment plan based on how your income level has potentially changed because of this, or if you've lost income. So there are a few different options there with forbearance or loan modification, or even, you know, potentially adding those payments towards the back end of the loan.
It's Jessica Menton, personal finance reporter at USA Today. There are more ways than ever, by the way, to connect to America's First News. You can enable the flash briefing skill in the Amazon Alexa app and set This Morning with Gordon Deal to be your flash briefing of choice. Then when you ask Alexa to play my flash briefing, you'll automatically get the latest news from your favorite show. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now, you can keep your face looking smooth, too, or your beard looking clean with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, May 7. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The coronavirus task force is not disbanding for now. Final version of a rule for how colleges must investigate sexual assault allegations. It allows both the accused and accuser to submit evidence and take part in cross-examination in live proceedings, and both parties can appeal a school ruling. Due to a lack of riders, Uber cutting 14% of its workforce. Former star quarterback Brett Favre repaying $1.1 million to a nonprofit for speeches he never made. The NFL releases its schedule tonight, and the college students connecting food banks to farms that have surplus food. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Dell Technologies advisors are here to help businesses work remotely with unparalleled collaboration solutions like Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. New Jersey became one of the last states to announce it would finish the academic year with distance learning. A frustrating announcement for parents who know they're not getting their bang for their tax buck. And devastating for students, especially high school and college seniors who've had their victory ride to the finish line canceled. We're joined now by Lily Eskelson-Garcia, president of the National Education Association. Lily, start with this. Why aren't kids going back to in-person learning?
Well, Gordon, first let me tell you, God bless you for saying it that way. I am tired of reporters saying school is closed, school is canceled, because teachers will throw things at you if you do that, because we will have a food fight because, oh, we have never worked so hard in our lives. It's like someone like pulled the fire alarm and we had to rush out of the school, and then they went, and you can't go back in. So we rushed back to our houses and we said, all right, I had 35 kids in my class. Now I got 35 kids sitting in 35 kitchens with 35 desperate parents, pairs of parents saying, what do I do now? And so we've had to be as creative as we've ever been. We've never had a National Teacher Day like this Teacher Day because nobody's decorating my door. I always have the PTA come in and decorate my door, and the kids would bring me, you know, cookies or something. And now it's all, you know, like waving from cyberspace. It feels so weird. It feels so weird. But we've never been more committed to these kids. They know they can count on us. And some kids, it's very cool. They've got, you know, they've got Wi-Fi in their home and they're using their mom's laptop or their dad's, you know, tablet, and it's working. It's hard, but it's working. And then there are other places where there's no Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
There's no mom or dad. They're working. That's mom working in the grocery store. And she has to show up and she has to take her smartphone with her. So we can't even call those kids. There's no landline in that home.
Yeah.
And so we've had to be creative about going to the local news station and saying, can we have an hour every morning, you know, from 8 to 9 or something like that, because we're going to put something on that's meaningful for those kids every day.
I'm partial.
I'm so proud of them.
I'm partial to high school kids since I have one, and I have one who just graduated. Like the emotional stress these kids are going through from not seeing each other. Do you fix that, or does that come back in the fall?
Well, again, I think we're just going to let you be our spokesperson. I'll just sit down and shut up because that is the right question to ask. Thank you. This is more than putting together some worksheets, you know, and handing them to the kids and saying, see you in a couple of months. These kids are going through what could be described as trauma. I think I'm going through it. I think you're going through it.
Yeah.
We're looking around going, there's an invisible something out there that if we breathe it, we could die. So let's stay in our homes. And how do you tell a kid this is why you're not going to school, or a birthday party or a wedding or a funeral?
Mm-hmm.
And so everything is like, no, we're going to call grandma on FaceTime. We're going to, you know, we have to do this. So these kids are, yes, they can get bored and they can watch too much TV, but they're also, think of those little wheels turning in their little heads. They're going, I'm in danger. I don't know what the world looks like. I'm looking, going, all right, you get up in the morning and you're a teacher, you do this. And now you're having to reinvent like who you are and what you do. And it's frightening.
Yeah.
So when those kids get back to school, and they will, I'm waiting for those doctors, the people who know what they're talking about, to say, now we can start this way, getting back. Let's be careful. Let's go slow. I'm listening to doctors. I'm not a doctor. But when they say it's time, so what are you going to do? How are you going to do it? And what I'm hoping is all those nice, important politicians will think just for 2 seconds, maybe I should ask a teacher.
Yeah.
Maybe I could say, what would it look like? How would we use our space?
Lily Eskelson-Garcia, president of the National Education Association. Montana, by the way, is allowing students back in classrooms starting today if local school boards approve. For example, Willow Creek School will open its doors to several of its 56 students and 18 staff members for the semester's last few weeks. Hey, thanks for being with us on this Friday Eve. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that some people staying home during the coronavirus pandemic have picked up some new hobbies, started baking or binge watching their favorite shows. Chris Woodhead is giving himself a new tattoo every day. According to USA Today, Woodhead, who lives in London and works at a tattoo studio, began tattooing himself each day starting on March 17th while he is at home with his pregnant wife. At last check, he was at 50 days with 50 tattoos and counting. He's documenting the process on his Instagram account. Woodhead says he's no stranger to tattooing himself, but it's been challenging to do so on spots like his chest and on the backs of his legs. Also challenging, finding space, since even before the virus lockdown, he had upwards of 1,000 tattoos on his body already.
Holy cow.
So these aren't super big. These are, yeah, I saw a picture. Still. These are small little tattoos. And again, finding space that you can actually do it yourself, I guess, right? You know, again, doing it on your back, it's really hard to do, obviously.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, just imagine you're right-handed.
Right.
And you need to do something on your right forearm.
Right.
And you have to use your left hand.
Yes.
I guess you try to keep it simple, or I don't know, do you use stencils if you put on tattoos? I don't know how that's done, but I can imagine that would be tricky and perhaps sloppy at times.
Yes, take some serious skill. These are not probably the most high-quality tattoos he's ever done, just because of the difficulty degree that he's having to go through.
And how about his pregnant wife?
Yeah.
Honey, I'm craving ice cream. Just a moment. Let me finish tattoo number 49. Right. I'll be right there, sweetie.
Yeah, one second, please. And call it, Gordon, a case of supreme embarrassment as millions of workers and students get used to the idea of teleconferencing and video conferencing on a daily basis. The Supreme Court has joined in the fun, holding oral arguments over the phone this week. And as is the case for the rest of us, there's always somebody who forgets to hit the mute button, which can lead to some unwanted sounds making their way in. During yesterday's session, attorney Ramon Martinez was arguing against certain uses of robocalls when he was interrupted by what definitely sounded like a flush of somebody's toilet.
And what the FCC has said is that when the subject matter of the call ranges to the topic, then the call is transformed. And it's a call that would have been allowed and it's no longer allowed.
As you can hear, Martinez is a pro, seemed unfazed by the unscheduled and very loud flush. And that wasn't the only tech trouble that befell the proceedings. Justice Stephen Breyer was briefly kicked offline during the same case when he says he was cut off when somebody else tried to call him.
Oh, wow. Or his Wi-Fi wasn't good or something.
Apparently no tech folks around to help out the Supreme Court justices. They have the same problems we do, which
That's
is
right.
nice to say.
That's funny. How about that flush? I'm guessing that had to be a little kid who left the door open while going to the bathroom.
That was right on top of wherever that phone was. It was right there.
It's 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for being with us. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at Gordon Deal. The chairman and CEO of Clorox is leaving no stone unturned in trying to get retail shelves fully stocked again consistently with the company's popular COVID-19 fighting wipes and other disinfectant products. Benno Dorer told Yahoo Finance that even still, it may be a few months before things are back to some form of normal in stores and online from a product availability standpoint. He says Clorox has turned out 40% more products last quarter than in the previous year's quarter, adding the company is investing in further capacity. That said, Mr. Dorer expects it'll be touch and go until there's substantial improvement in availability this summer. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump says the White House Coronavirus Task Force will remain in place after all, with a focus on the economy and developing a vaccine. That news came a day after administration officials said they were considering disbanding the group in the coming weeks.
By Monday, we'll be announcing two or three new members to the task force.
Number two.
The meatpacking industry hit a grim milestone this week when the number of coronavirus cases tied to outbreaks at its plants passed 10,000. At least 45 workers have died. The outbreaks have prompted at least 40 plant closures, lasting anywhere from one day to several weeks. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue says the plants are starting to come back.
Obviously, because of some infected employees, they won't be full force for a while.
The shutdowns triggered an executive order by President Trump to keep plants open. But more than a week after that order, closures have continued unabated.
Number three.
A chemical gas leak from an industrial plant in southern India early today left leaving people struggling to breathe and collapsing in the streets as they tried to flee. At least a dozen people were killed and nearly 1,000 suffered breathing difficulties and other reactions. The synthetic chemical styrene leaked from the LG Polymers plant in a city on India's Bay of Bengal coast. Supreme Court justices voiced split views over Trump administration rules allowing employers to claim religious exemptions from covering birth control in their health insurance plans, with Chief Justice John Roberts potentially holding a pivotal vote. The case is the latest in a series of long-running legal fights over moral and religious exemptions to a requirement stemming from the Affordable Care Act that most workplace health plans cover contraception with no out-of-pocket costs. And the drive-in movie is making quite the comeback. Robert De Niro's Tribeca Enterprises is teaming with IMAX and AT&T for a Tribeca Drive-In, a summer film series that will be held at drive-in theaters and other venues throughout the country. The series promises a collection of new, classic, and independent films, as well as music and sporting events. Venues, films, and ticket information will be announced later.
Now, it's going to be interesting to watch a sporting event, perhaps, from a drive-in movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I've never been to one. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. A group of college students delivering more than 100 tons of potatoes, onions, and eggs to food banks in three different states as part of a project to help farms whose food was going to waste because of the coronavirus pandemic. The FarmLink project, which began 3 weeks ago, fills a need of connecting farms saddled with surplus food to food banks facing miles of cars and out-of-work consumers. The excess farm food is from things like canceled restaurant contracts and reduced demand. Fox News says the idea from FarmLink is from founder James Kainoff, a sophomore at Stanford. On Tuesday, Mr. Kainoff and a few friends who attend college across the country rented a truck, picked up 79,000 eggs at a distributor near Los Angeles, and then deliver them to three food banks. They're also raising money through their website to help field workers, truckers, and farmers to feed families in need. It's already paid out $2,500 raised from tax-deductible donations from amounts of $5 and $10. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.